over to Mr. Tommy Shields.
Well, now, let's see what I was talking about when last met on a Sunday. I don't know. Seriously, though, it seems that's a very long time ago since I last had the pleasure of speaking to you on a Sunday afternoon. If I remember correctly, it was on the 12th of March, the Sunday before we went off the air at Troon on the west coast of Scotland. And if I said that a lot has happened to us since then, and believe you me, that would be the understatement of the year. Not only has a lot happened, everything has happened to us. You name it, and we've been affected by it. And I think this is an opportune moment for me to say two very special things. And the first one is to thank the many, many listeners in Scotland who never lost faith in us. Their letters over the past few weeks, and again I speak most sincerely, were a great joy to all of us here at Radio Scotland House. And the second thing is to say a very special word of thanks, of praise indeed, to all of my staff, and to the boys especially on the Comet, for their unquenchable spirit and the determination to bring you their programs from the good ship, the Comet. Now, if I may, I'd like to go over, very briefly, the events of the past few weeks, so that you may all be familiar with some of the trials we've had to endure in order to keep Radio Scotland alive. Yes, would you come in? Okay, Wilson, it's all right. Would you leave that for a moment? Okay. Now, would you leave it just now? Thank you very much. All right. As you will have heard, I had an interruption there. I'm recording this in the office on a Saturday afternoon in order that we may be able to get this out to the boat. And I think it would be, well, informal if you heard all that was going on around me anyway, because we are very open at Radio Scotland House. We never heard anything. Well, as I was saying before I was interrupted by the boy, Mervyn, I'd just like to go over some, as I said, very briefly, what's been happening to us since the 13th of March. Well, you know, we went over to Ireland, and we had a very loyal audience in Ireland, but believe you me, we are also very happy to be back again among rain folk in Scotland. As I said, we had a very loyal audience in Ireland, and every day the numbers grew and grew and grew. And the signal and the programming, of course, was being received very well in Ireland, of course, and in the Liverpool, in the Yorkshire, and in the Welsh areas. But, of course, we are Radio Scotland, and therefore we were determined that whatever the cost, and believe you me, it's a very expensive business, you know, moving our ship from A to B and from B to C and so on and so on, we were determined to bring our ship over again among our own folk, as I said earlier, if the signal from Ireland wasn't very good. Well now, after the 13th of March, we ran into 3 weeks of heavy gales on the west coast. We had forces 6, 7, 8 and 9, and we weren't able to move. We were lying at anchor, silent incidentally, as you will remember, I'm sure, many of you, unable to move out because of the gales and unable to broadcast because we were within the territorial water area of Scotland. Well, when eventually we left the Clyde, we headed for the north, and we had a break in the weather, but alas, it only lasted for about a day. We ran into a very heavy gale in Loch Ewe in Skye, and we had to seek shelter there, and in fact we were lying in Loch Ewe for, if I remember correctly, I'm not looking at the logbook now incidentally, I'm just speaking out of my head at the moment. We were in Loch Hugh about 3.5 days. And it was then that the possibility of moving to Ireland was presented to me, and on the advice of radio experts, who unfortunately could only guess at the results, we decided to bring the ship around again over to Ireland and to anchor her off Ballywalter in the County Down. Well, we weren't very long there when we discovered that, again, alas, our programs, our signal, were not being heard in the Glasgow area, and was certainly not being heard in Edinburgh and beyond. Well, again, the thought of moving the ship had to be discussed, and we tried everything to boost the signal's strength, first of all, because, as I said earlier, moving our ship, you see, we have no engines in the Comet, and it's an expensive business, having to be, you know, sort of towed round from place to place, and we tried to boost up the signal strength, but it's all tied up with the size and the length and the output through the aerial. So, as I said, the Irish audience were enjoying the programs immensely, but we weren't able to get our signals in among, again, I'm going to use the phrase, we're in folk. And incidentally, I'm sorry to have to relate here, but I think it's only fair that it should be said. And, you know, I said, when I was doing the Hooley program, I presented one on the air every Friday evening for an hour or so, and I've always said this, that the Irish folks are among the kindest and the warmest of all the peoples in the world. And, as I say, I still stand by that saying, because I do believe, indeed, that the Irish folks are very friendly, indeed, but their officials in the Belfast area, and I'm referring here, of course, to the customs and the excise people over there, well, they weren't awfully friendly to us at all. It was said, you know, to one of our people over there, off the record this was, that they had orders from the London area to mess us about, and that is indeed exactly just what they did do. One of my executives, who's a former disc jockey, Alan McKenzie, and other members of my staff, you know, they were held up at the quayside in Ireland for sometimes something like 4 to 5 hours to clear all the customs formalities. And all they had to clear were a few bits and pieces of luggage and some foodstuffs. Alan has a log there where he's telling me just the other day that in fact he was messed around. He was sent to one office, filled in a form, sent into another office, filled in another form, and then he was sent back. This was the wrong form, and he was told, you see that office across there, you go in there and fill in this other form, and that's not the right thing, and you go back in 5 hours in order to clear the ship out of there. You know, I myself went over to Bangor on the last Saturday we were in Ireland, and we were up very early. We got the 0645 plane, I think it was, out of Abbotsinch, and we got to Ireland at 7:30, and we got down to Bangor at 8:30. Everything was laid on for us. We had the boat all arranged on the day before, and we sat into the boat, we got into the boat, and we're almost away when one of the customs men, he came trooping along the harbour and said, where are you going? And we, of course, he knew very well where we were going, and I said, well, I'm Mr. Shields, and we're going out to the Comet for the very last time. Oh, we're carrying some hand luggage and some foodstuffs for the boys on the Comet, not for the voyage round over to Scotland. He says, well, I'm sorry, but you'll have to take the boat up into Belfast to have it cleared. I said to him, well, this is an extra 3 hours run on to the trip, 3 hours there and 3 hours back, plus another 3 hours out to the Comet. We will never get away today. And I had the tug, incidentally, standing by the Comet at this particular time. In fact, we had the tug over there at 0500 hours in the morning, and he said, well, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. These are the rules and regulations in Ireland, and you've got to do it. So I phoned his superior and explained that this would be the last time we would be making this trip from Ireland, and But he relented a little bit and said, well, I would have to come up to Belfast to sign some forms and some papers, and I was to bring the skipper of the vessel with me. So hired a car, went from there up to Belfast, signed what I thought was a blank-looking form. There's nothing on it, just the name and address of the Customs House, I think. That's all I saw anyway. And the chappy there, he put a stamp on it and says, well, there we are, on you go. And I said, well, what about the boat? You know, who's going to, you know, I mean, I could be carrying anything. He said, well, that's all right, on you go. I took the foreign back down to the customs man, and after 1 hour's journey in the car, handed him the form, and then he said, well, it's all right, you know, for us to go. Well, this is the kind of thing I mean. This was the red tape at its worst, the extreme. Anyway, all that is behind us, we hope, although we are still experiencing, I'm sorry to say, some of the red tape in the customs port of Methil, which makes our trip out to the Comet about 4 hours there and 4 hours back, instead of, for example, leaving from Anstruther, which would reduce the journey by at least 5 hours. And when I'm on about this too, I would just like to say one thing here and now, and that is that no matter how difficult the authorities make it for me to operate Radio Scotland, I am determined to go on providing the people of my own land with the service they want. And only when the public demand for it wanes, if it ever will in fact wane, will I ever give up the fight, as it were. Anyway, over to the trip from Ireland. When we left Ireland on Saturday evening, about 4:45, it was a beautiful day, weather absolutely perfect, and the journey was expected to take only 72 hours. But do you know how long we were on the way? 9. Now let me spell that for you. N-I-N-E. 9 days. We ran into everything humanly possible with the elements. We had gales, force 8, 9s and 10s. We had snow, thunder and lightning. We had snow, we had sleet, we had rains, we had a heavy sea. Anyway, we got up round the west coast, over the top of Scotland, and when we rounded the top, believe you me or believe you me not, we ran into a force 9 gale in the Moray Firth, and were forced to seek shelter there for 2 days. Now this, of course, is in May, when, at a time when one would normally expect all the gales to be away. But there we are. We seem to have a sort of a jinx over us. I don't know what's wrong. However, I'd like to pay a special sort of tribute here to the captain and the crew of the Steel and the Benny Tug for the seamanship, for the patience and the tolerance with us on this, the very last tour of our career. For make no mistake about it, we are anchored not far from Fife Ness, outside the territorial water area, outside territorial water area this time, and it's there that we mean to stay. You know, I never did get around to thanking all of you who wrote to the Prime Minister when I asked you to a way back in March, I think it was, and I'd like to take this opportunity now of doing that here and now, because I know that very many thousands of you wrote away to the Prime Minister appealing, or rather demanding to, that he should leave Radio Scotland on its own, alone, as we were providing service to the people. And I do know, too, that many of you have had a printed form from the Postmaster General's office. And I'd just like to say, incidentally, that next Sunday, all being well, I'd like to reply to this, you know, particular form, because it actually, you know, it's true, there are very many inaccuracies in it. I won't go into them now, because it would take far too long, and I would like to devote, if I may, as I said, next Sunday, almost all of the good neighbours to explaining some of the inaccuracies in the prime, in the Postmaster General's rather, forum, which I know he's been sending out to all of the people who wrote to the Prime Minister. Well, what else will I tell you about? I thought I would, anyway, I would fill you in on some of the ill luck we've had over the past few weeks, because I know you're always very interested in our affairs, And as I said to you very early on in the old days, I would like to keep you informed and well up to date with all our affairs. I'd like to tell you about a visitor I had up at the office the other day. And although the happy ending is not yet in sight for him, it in a way reflects on other aspects of human behaviour and other troubles of the heart that have affected or may still be affecting many of you this afternoon. My visitor was a youngish man of about 35, and he wanted to join the radio ship as a seaman. He said to me, and he was quite straightforward about it, he said, "I want to get away from it all for a while, away from people. I'm fed up with people. I've had enough of them." And I pointed out to him that we had a very happy ship indeed with a very happy crew, and I thought that his outlook wouldn't do anything to, you know, sort of boost the morale on the ship. He replied, "Well, I'd be all right out there. It's only just..." And he stopped and he said, "Do you know, I live all alone. I haven't a soul in the world that I can speak to. Do you mind if I tell you something about it?" And, well, I asked Alison, my secretary, to bring in some tea. And as he sipped from the cup, he said, "Well, 2 weeks ago, I was engaged. My girl saw me one evening. We were going out for the evening, and she's very quiet, and I asked her what was wrong, and she told me that she had found someone else. And I just can't get it out of my head. You see, we were almost married. We meant so much to each other one day, and the next she seemed to be so different, absolutely different. It seems that she met another young man and was attracted to him immediately, and nothing I could say or do would make her change her mind. I've been trying to telephone her and to see her, but she's adamant. She's fallen for this other chap, and what can I do?" he asked me. Well, he was a man facing one of the most inexplicable things in the world, one of the enigmas of the human race, a happening that has been with us since the Garden of Eden. His grief was very plain and very understandable, but he couldn't understand. And I thought at the time, and who is there among us to explain it away for him? You see, selection or attraction and love is predominantly a Western civilization thing. And very often the end result is that every day many thousands of young people are hurt or have to go through an agonizing phase of their lives when one or the other of them, you know, breaks off the friendship. And I thought of quoting a line from Shakespeare that seems to sum it all up for me at any rate. It's a line that goes something like, "Or as one nail by strength drives out another, so the remembrance of my former love is by a newer object quite forgotten." Well, I think he went away feeling a little bit more relieved anyway by what he had to tell me. As I say, he didn't have anyone else to speak to. He said that anyway. And I am sure, too, that he will find that perhaps, after all, his destiny lies elsewhere. Perhaps a thousand miles away in another land, and perhaps, who knows, under another moon. Oh, before I forget, I'd just like to tell you something about a scheme that my board of directors and I have been discussing for many weeks now. And it's a scheme that we would like to ask you to participate in. It's mainly to provide for the future of the station and to bring you, the listener, if I can use this term, into the front line of the battle. Now, simply, it means that my scheme is for a supporters club, and you, the listener, will be able to join at a nominal sum, at a very nominal sum, and to take part or to reap, for example, some of the benefits in wholesale shopping, a weekly raffle, free holidays and cars, and so on and so on and so on. But I'll be back during the week, all being well, perhaps on Thursday, to explain my scheme in all the detail there, and to ask you, rather to invite you, to join our supporters club. So, that's something to look forward to, I sincerely hope. Well, now, that is really all from me for this week. I'll be back, all being well, next Sunday with a summary of events of the week, A and B, to tell you, or rather to explain away some of the inaccuracies which have been contained in the printed form you've been receiving from the Postmaster General's office, and, of course, to tell you something else, too, of the Supporters Club and of the benefits, etc., and our aims and ideals in this connection. But if I may, I'd like to end as usual by asking all of you to drive with care this week. And of course by wishing each and every one of you, and especially those of you in hospital and to the doctors and the nurses who may be looking after you, to, well, just to keep happy and to keep your faces with a big smile on them. There we are. And, and if I could also pass on, this is a very appropriate moment, I think, to pass on our very good wishes and regards to both Celtic and Rangers for the wonderful season there in the past. Never mind the Russian defeat. I think that's just a flash in the pan anyway, that's what I think. But however, to hope that Celtic and Rangers are able to bring over to Scotland for the first time ever some of the trophies that have been lying over in Europe, and to bring them over to the rightful place here in dear old Glasgow. Well, there we are then. Again, if you are driving this week, please drive with care, and until next Sunday then, all the very best from me, and look after yourselves. Bye-bye just now. Bye-bye.
And it's many thanks to our managing director, Mr. Tommy Shields, for his weekly fireside chat and good neighbours. We invite you to join Mr. Shields at the same time next week. That's 1:30 for another weekly fireside chat. But right now...